The Womanity Project. Let's talk about gender. Genders. Gender? Gender equality.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Womanity Project Live. I'm Celine Rosenthal, and you're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. And Aurelia's back!
Yay! Hello! It's so nice to be back with you, and thank you, Celine, so much for being like such a wonderful host while I was away. So thank you.
You're very welcome.
And today, we have the great pleasure of airing our interview with Glenda Testoni. Glenda is the first female executive director of New York City's LGBT Community Center.
My first question would be, so your name is Glenda Testoni. Did you say Testoni or Testone?
I say Testone.
All right.
It depends. If it's an Italian restaurant or we're in Italy, you could say Testone.
All right. And I know it's kind of sounds weird, but I'm going to ask you about your name. Sure. So first, Testone, so is that Italian?
It is Italian.
So yeah. You're coming from an Italian family?
Yeah, my dad's name is Vito. I always like to say that because it illustrates the true Italian-ness of him, although he grew up on pasta, and so he doesn't eat that anymore. So he's very Italian in some ways and un-Italian in others. But yeah, my dad is 100% Italian, and then my mom is Dutch and English and French and a little bit of a mixture. But I would say the dominant cultural influence was Italian.
And Glenda, the name, so it's with two N.
Yeah.
Where did that come from?
Yeah, my grandfather's name was Glenn, and he passed away right before I was born, and he was Glenn with two N's. So if I was a boy, I would have been Glenn, and I was a girl, so I'm Glenda. So I'm originally from upstate New York, a place called Central Square. And it's actually about 15 minutes north of Syracuse, New York, which is truly Central New York, right in the middle. And I grew up in a pretty rural place. My family had a house in the Adirondacks, and we used to go there every summer. And so I had what sort of feels like a pretty typical white American childhood. I have one sister. She's 3 years younger than me. I went to college at Syracuse University. My mom was a social worker, and she was the assistant director of an African-American community center in Syracuse for most of my life. That was the bulk, like, of her career, 30 years or something. And she started to do a lot of work and eventually created a support group for victims of domestic violence when she was working there. And so that kind of opened my eyes to the way that women were treated differently in our society. And, you know, it was something I lived with my whole life. I saw it from teachers. I saw it from students when I was growing up in high school. And I didn't know what it was and didn't really have a name for it. And I think when I got to college and my mom started the support group, and it was around the time when the O.J. Simpson trial started. And I'm thinking of this also because we just had the mini-series or the television series.
I'm watching it now.
And it's, gosh, it's so fascinating to relive it and just see all the layers of sexism, racism, you know, just, oh my gosh, police violence. It's just incredible. And so I think that kind of started to open my eyes. And then I took a philosophy of feminism course because my dual major was philosophy. And that, I think that was the spark that gave me the initial framework to say, oh, there's a name for this, like this feeling that I've had of being different or being less than boys in school. Like, this is a thing. There's actually a thing that happens to girls who are my age where, you know, we're feeling good, we're feeling great, and then we're not.
Glenda talks about the shocking realization of gender differentiation. You know, the moment when, as a little girl or boy, you realize that people are being treated differently based on their gender. For a girl, for instance, her body starts to change and all of a sudden she feels judged on her physicality.
For instance, the other day, my 5-year-old daughter was talking about boobies and seemed really interested in it. and her brother and father laughed at her. My daughter got really upset and she started to cry really hard and said, I don't want to get boobies. I don't want them to grow. Oh, it was heartbreaking.
When you think about it, the physical transformation for girls is very traumatic. Boys are born with their penis and it stays that way for the most part. And yeah, their voice changes as teenagers, but for girls, they have a child's body and then all of a sudden they get their period, they get breasts.
And society's gaze changes. They are becoming women, seen as a sexual object. So, we ask Glenda how it was for her.
So, one of our big thing here is to talk about genders. And one might be an obvious question, but I'm going to ask it. What gender do you identify with?
Sure. Not always an obvious question. Very good to ask. So I identify as a woman, and I was born a woman, and I think it's important to ask and important to do this more and more, because we shouldn't assume people's gender identity, and it's good to talk about it, and it's good to articulate, for people to be able to articulate what that means to them. You know, some people are gender fluid or gender non-binary, and use pronouns like they or them instead of she or her, which is what I happen to use. And I think it's a really important conversation that we're having where people are starting to feel like they can define their own gender. And that's something I fully support and think we should talk about more and more.
Absolutely. And when you say, so you define yourself as a woman, what are the attributes you put behind that word?
Oh, goodness. Yeah, that's...
another big question.
I know, and it's like a loaded question because... but it doesn't have to be. I guess when I identify as a woman, you know, I feel like I'm... My gender identity sort of matches the gender I was assigned at birth. I was born and the doctor said, yay, you're a girl, or and maybe not yay. That might be overly optimistic. Perhaps the doctor said, it's a girl. And I feel that way. I feel like a woman and a girl and the way that society sort of defines that. And to me that, you know, when I think of like, get philosophical about it, I think that being a woman is, I associate with sort of kindness, and this very much comes from my mother, and compassion, and just someone who is really human and in touch emotionally. That's sort of what I think of if I was asked to like boil down what being a woman is.
How do you see genders? How are they treated in society? Like, could you describe that?
Well, I think they're treated differently, tremendously differently. And it's, you know, you see it all the time. I was thinking about coming here for this interview and I was like, gosh, this is something I notice almost every day. And then to be asked to think about it, I'm sort of like, but what, I'm so used to it. I think that men and women are treated differently in this society, and there's a spectrum around that. You know, men who act more feminine are treated differently and often badly. And women who act like men can be treated badly. And so I see that the thing that I have particularly noticed in my life that I really wish was different is that I think the emphasis and the focus on women's physical appearance is just tremendous. And the line that women have to walk of what is acceptable, what is not too thin, what is not too fat, what is not too sexy, what is not too prude, what, you know, is just so narrow and impossible that no one fits. And I think that's something we see in the mainstream media all the time. And the way in which we feel completely comfortable to comment on women's bodies and women's appearance in a way that we do not and would not with men is just one kind of very clear example for me of how people are treated differently based on their gender expression.
This isn't a new topic. I feel like we've been talking about the severity of body shaming in our culture for as long as I can remember. But what I think has been interesting this past year, and further underlines Glenda's point, is that we are seeing the issue bleed into an arena outside of fashion and entertainment. Remember what happened during the Olympics.
Mexican gymnast Alexa Moreno started getting body shamed by Twitter users. They called her, quote, the pig. Not that we should need a qualifier to underline the gross indecency and lack of intelligence and class that such tweets exhibit, but Alexa Moreno was 4'10" and 99 pounds of muscle. What the ever-loving fuck is wrong with people? And why is there this perception that this kind of callous criticism of women's bodies is to be expected?
When you consider the average weight of a supermodel, the $70 billion dieting industry, or the 6 to 11 million people who struggle with eating disorder, you come to one conclusion. America is virtually obsessed with women's body size and body shape. Ironic for a country that has the highest rate of obesity in the world. And it all started at the end of the 19th century.
Between 1890 and 1920, America's image of the ideal body completely changed from one of healthful plumpness to one where fatness became associated with sloth. The fashion for thin, boyish figures took hold in the 1920s, and some crazy diets started to emerge. Some of you might have heard of the cigarette diet. A Lucky Strike advertisement read, "Reach for a Lucky instead of a sweet."
Wow. When the 1960s came rolling in, societal roles for both men and women were turned upside down. Curves weren't as important as being real thin and elegantly fashionable, like the tiny model Twiggy and the slender, dewy-like Audrey Hepburn, both of whom were fashion and body image icons during this decade. The 90s was perhaps when the unhealthy obsession with fitness began, and Kate Moss herself coined the phrase, "Nothing tastes as good as skinny feels."
Thanks, Kate. Thanks for that one. Fatness and thinness are still markers of a person's worth for some reason, and the thin body remains the constant ideal to aspire to, even though all other body-based objectives from hairstyle, makeup, and clothing regularly change over the seasons. Images and products marketed to us through mass media are still trying to promote the notion that we need to possess a thin, quote, ideal body.
With the technological advancements of mass media tools, sexual objectification of women is an even bigger, more widespread issue now than it was during the second wave of feminism. In her book, Unbearable Weight, in 1993, Suzanne Baudeau, a feminist philosopher, argues that anorexia and bulimia are in part caused by pressure from our consumer culture.
Women, bombarded with images of the ideal body daily, can become exceptionally unwell trying to achieve it. Susie Orbach, a controversial British psychotherapist, analyst, and author of Fat is a Feminist Issue, even wrote that some women become overweight as a way of protecting themselves from being sexually objectified by men, especially those abused in their formative years.
Things are changing slowly, but so far, we just haven't made very much progress. We're going to take a little break, and in the meantime, we'll leave you with one of Glenda's power songs. I'll let her explain.
You know, I discovered Ani DiFranco in college, and I still find her very empowering. I have some friends, Kendall, who make fun of me for, you know, loving Ani and knowing all the words to all of her songs. But I think just listening to her songs, and in particular, Not a Pretty Girl, which was sort of like another, like, oh, there's a different way to be. Like, she's actually celebrating, I'm not what you all think I should be.
That is not what I do. I ain't no damsel. puzzle and distress. And I don't need to be rescued, so put me down, punk. Wouldn't you prefer a maiden fair? Isn't there a kitten stuck up a tree somewhere? I am not an angry girl, but it seems like I've got everyone fooled. Every time I say something they find hard to hear, they chalk it up to my anger and never to their own fear. Imagine you're a girl just trying to finally complain, knowing full well they prefer you were dirty and smiling. And I am sorry, but I am not a maiden fair, and I am not a kitten stuck up a tree somewhere. Generally, my generation wouldn't be caught dead working for the man. And generally, I agree with them. Trouble is, you gotta have yourself an alternate plan. And I have earned my disillusionment. I have been working all of my life, and I am a patriot. I have been fighting the good fight. And what if there are no damsels in distress? What if I knew that and I called your bluff? Don't you think every kitten figures out how to get down? Whether or not you ever show up. Be a pretty girl. I wanna be more than a pretty girl.
You're listening to The Womanity Project on Radio Free Brooklyn. When we left off, Glenda was sharing her feelings about the emphasis and the focus on women's physical appearance that she wishes will change.
I think it would be great if we could support each other and focus on that a little less, you know, in general. I think that, you know, in some ways over, I started my career in journalism and in media and sort of have rotated out of that. And I think in many ways this, you know, we have many more ways to connect with each other around social media. And there's just so much. It used to be like television and there were three channels, ABC, NBC, CBS. And now it's like, there are a million ways to communicate with people, but I think in some ways it's become even more superficial. And so I think just really going beneath the surface and trying not to focus quite so much on the appearance of things and really to take the time to have conversations with people. And, you know, we have a great opportunity. We hopefully will have a woman running for president and we will have a man running for president. And in this country, and we have an opportunity, the media does, society does, voters do, to treat these people equally and evaluate them equally. And that could be a really transformational exercise to sort of see how we would do that, because I don't think we do that very often in our country. I would really love to see no more body shaming ever for any reason. I just think that, and women do it to each other, men do it, and I think it just really reinforces a terrible standard that really almost no one can meet. And I certainly grew up, you know, feeling heavy and at one point lost 60 pounds and sort of went through, you know, so went through most of my life kind of bigger than society would have wanted me to be, and then smaller. And, you know, it's just such a minefield, and I'd like to get rid of that if we could. And I guess the other way to say it, the other way to do that is more celebration of women's bodies and different women's bodies, and, you know, just honoring that in a way that is not completely body focused, but that does show a diversity of representations of how women can be in this world.
Definitely. And so you, like you said, you went through this change, and so as of today, like, do you feel comfortable in your own body?
That's a really good question. I do, and it's taken me such a long time to get there. Years and years of therapy. but yeah, I do. I really, and I didn't ever think I would get there. You know, I have a family background of some eating disorders, and so I definitely had to sort of go through some stuff. And now sitting here as an adult, I feel like much more in control of making decisions about what I want to do with my body. And yeah, I feel, yeah, I love my body.
Oh, good. and do you think, like, it's something, like you said, it was a process, you went through therapy, but did you feel like one morning you woke up and you were like,
oh gosh, no. I mean, it wasn't one morning, but it was, I think when I started to really get comfortable with my body, and feel better about it and feel like I was really taking care, like treating it well for the first time in a while, I would notice the absence of shame and the absence of negativity. And, you know, just from the second I woke up to the second I went to bed. So that's something I would notice. And I would have little moments of like, oh, you know, I'm going on vacation. I'm so glad that I'm not thinking, oh my God, I have to wear a bathing suit. You know, so it was like the absence of that stuff that I really noticed in the beginning.
Because I went myself as well with an eating disorder problem. And I remember, like, so on the other side, I was too weighty, like, skinny, bad. But I remember having sentences, like, in my head when either I was constantly thinking of food or constantly thinking, like, my brain was outside me. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why, but, like, one day, like, you know, talking, like, I felt like all of a sudden my body and myself became one again. Mm-hmm. And I remember this moment, like, when I was feeling so light, because all of a sudden there were all this stupid disease, because for me it's really like it is a disease.
Sharing. You can relate. No, it does. It feels, it's interesting. It's like the absence of all that negative shit. Can we say shit?
Oh yeah.
Okay. All that
Brooklyn.
All that negative shit is like, it is really freeing. It feels lighter. In such a positive way.
So if you had like something to say to someone, let's say we feel the same or we go through the same issue, what would it be? Like if you could talk to yourself 20 years before or ahead, like what would you say to yourself?
I guess I would say, please talk to yourself the way you would talk to a friend. Please don't talk to yourself the way you're talking to yourself. You know, I think that's an important to realize, to really start to examine. And, you know, that's where therapy was very helpful, to really get outside of your head and start examining what you say to yourself and how you treat yourself in your mind is really important. And so I would say, please be kind about what you say to yourself. And that means not like, please be kind, what's wrong with you, why are you talking to, you know, which, why are you saying that to yourself? It's more like really trying to be, to treat yourself the way you would if a friend was sitting in front of you saying, you know, I'm struggling with this. You wouldn't be like, what's wrong with you?
Hopefully not.
Hopefully not. So I guess that would be my advice.
You have been listening to The Womanity Project on Radio Free Brooklyn. How question to you this week. Have you ever experienced body shaming? If so, please share your story with us.
You can like us and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Womanity Project. You can support us and sponsor us on our page, radiofreebrooklyn.com/show/the-womanity-project.
Any dollar counts. Mm-hmm. And please also send your power song. We'll play it on our future episodes.
Special thanks this week to Glenda Testoni, her lovely assistant, Mary Stayer, Lizzie Hagstedt, and of course, Radio Free Brooklyn.
Tune in next week, The Womanity Project on Radio Free Brooklyn, every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time.
And dear listeners, we are airing one of our requested power songs to close out our show. This song was submitted by Emily Ballou, Black Horse and the Cherry Tree by Katie Tunstall. Au revoir tout le monde, à la semaine prochaine!
Au revoir!
2, 3, 4, ooh! Knows it better than I know myself, so I'm gonna let her do all the talking. Ooh-hoo. Ooh-hoo. I came across a place in the middle of nowhere with a big black horse and a cherry tree. Ooh-hoo. Ooh-hoo. I felt a little fear upon my back. I said, don't look back, just keep on walking. Ooh-hoo. Ooh-hoo. When the big black horse said, look this way, he said, hey, but I said no, 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 no. I said no, no, you're not the one for me. No, 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 no. I said no, no, you're not the one for me. Ooh. And my heart hit a problem in the early hours, so I stopped it dead for a beat or two. Ooh. But I cut some cord and I shouldn't have done it, and it won't forgive me after all these years. Ooh-hoo. Ooh-hoo. So I sent it to a place in the middle of nowhere with a big black horse and a cherry tree.